Welcome to the program for Thursday, February 16th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday at 3 is always industry chatter, and I am pleased to welcome to the program today Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney, and Randy, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for being here today. First of all, let's start with tell me about what A.T. Kearney does for in the federal space.
Sure. A.T. Kearney is a global management consulting firm. We've been around since 1926, and we actually do a lot of work commercially, probably 80% commercial, 20% in the public sector in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to think we operate at the junction of strategy and operations,
mm-hmm.
so basically helping clients put strategy in place and then, very importantly, execute those strategies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member of our public sector aerospace and defense practice,
mm-hmm.
and we actually work with both clients on the government side as well as on the contractor or supplier side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we do is really bringing those commercial best practices to bear in the government. That's kind of our stock in trade because we do come from commercial roots, and we found a lot of opportunity to bring commercial best practices mm-hmm. Into the government arena.
What do you see at that juncture right now that you're talking about between industry and the Defense Department? I mean, there's a lot of conversation about what the new budget realities will mean. There are varying opinions as to how potentially severe it will or won't be for the defense contracting community. This seems to be an area that's very much in flux right now.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And the budget that was released, Monday of
mm-hmm.
this week, calls for $487 billion in cuts over the next 10 years in defense. And the budget that was presented actually does reflect, I think, some very strategic puts and takes, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice it to say, at that level, it has stirred a lot of conversation, stirring a lot of conversation between government and industry on what the implications will be. Of course, what's looming out there that nobody's really talking about is sequestration,
mm-hmm.
Title III of the Budget Control Act, which would be another $500 billion from the defense budget. And, I think people will say the $487 billion reduction actually causes some pain and angst. The $500 billion reduction required by sequestration, if that actually happens, is kind of Katie bar the door.
Yeah.
I think that the real, perspective that I have is it's kind of, I think it was Secretary Gates made the point a couple summers ago, never lose the opportunity that a good crisis provides, or something along those lines, right? And I guess our hope in talking with both on the government side and the contractor side is that this really provides, hopefully, an opportunity to really step back and really, no kidding, examine how government and the supply side does business with each other. Tremendous room for improvement. I think both sides will clearly support that perspective. So, maybe it's the impetus, if you will, to kind of push us to do business differently, which we need to do.
That's a concept that I think is really interesting, because so much of what has been said about where the defense budget is headed and where the contracting community is headed is gloom and doom. This is going to be terrible and awful and on and on and on. Sky is falling. The reality of it is the percentage of budget that's being cut is not very great. It's certainly significant, but as a percentage of the overall defense budget, it's rather small. And I noticed you used the word opportunity. There is potential here for good to come out of this. Talk about a little bit more detail about some of the potential places for that opportunity to make the system work better because of the situation that we're in.
Sure. And I guess maybe just stepping back, we fundamentally kind of have a couple of choices, right? You can reduce scope,
mm-hmm.
you can cut programs, you can reduce force structure, or you can drive productivity and efficiency, basically doing more with less.
Mm-hmm.
Given the magnitude of the cuts, and particularly if we're looking at additional multi-hundred billion dollars of cuts, you're going to have to do both. Needless to say, if we step back and think about the position I prefer to be in, it would be, let's drive productivity, let's do more with less, let's really try to drive the programs under the banner of affordability, if
mm-hmm.
you will. And there are lots and lots of opportunities to do that. And I'll say that the budget that was just submitted does in fact include, I think, $60 billion in efficiency and overhead reductions and those kinds of things. But I think, and that was in addition to about $150 billion that Secretary Gates put forth. But, I think you'd be challenged to find anybody on either side of the fence that says, gee, that's all the opportunity that's there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reality is we've probably just kind of touched the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of opportunities in how to do business, I think, more efficiently and just kind of putting on a commercial hat again. When you've seen in the commercial sector industries, businesses come under competitive pressure, maybe a downturn in demand, what do they do? Well, they typically step back, they take a look at their supply chain, their value chain, and say, what do we really need to do transformationally to enable us to not only survive, but the best companies, I would argue, thrive and
mm-hmm.
actually gain market share and figure out how to get ahead of the curve in these kind of crisis times. So, what do they do? We see probably a lot more collaboration with the strategic suppliers. We see really looking at how I really exploit the value contribution of the supplier. And that value contribution is a very important concept. It doesn't mean just beating the price down or
mm-hmm.
beating the margins down, but really how can I get more value out of my supplier relationships? And then just really looking at speed, agility, and adaptivity of their value chain.
Mm-hmm.
In a government context, and particularly in a defense contract context, the value chain is fundamentally rigid. And that's really, I think, a fundamental impediment to doing some of those kind of things that a commercial company in a commercial environment would tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
We last summer talked to a spectrum of folks from the tier threes to the primes, and then on the government side, from the program managers all the way up to some of the top policy folks in the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Under this whole auspices of affordability and what can be done differently on both sides to try to drive better productivity and efficiency. And an overriding theme was, we just have such a kind of an overriding rigid value chain that it's an impediment to do things that we might otherwise like to do.
I want to come back to the idea of more with less, but I want to ask you a question about the document itself and the numbers that are contained therein before we get too far away from it. Did it help, do you think, from a strategic perspective, to kind of get a telegraph, some smoke signals from Secretary Panetta back in November, December, and in January about what we could expect to see? Of course, the new strategy was indicative of what we might see in the numbers. He referenced on a number of occasions, well, that'll be fleshed out when the budget comes out. That'll be fleshed out when the budget comes out. But at least it seemed like there were a lot of clues available for both agencies inside DOD and for the companies that do business with them to at least have some warning about what might be coming. It turns out it was on Monday.
I think that's absolutely accurate. I'm not holding myself out to be a budget guru, not necessarily my shtick, but in talking with lots of folks, the general consensus was there were very few, if any, surprises.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. And I guess the interesting other point is, a budget that's submitted by the president is not really a budget. It's kind of a
wish list.
Opening ante, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. But, the Defense Department proposed is very much aligned with the strategy that's been espoused in terms of, shifting emphasis to Asia-Pacific and kind of reducing the ground and improving cyber and air and Navy.
I thought it was interesting that the first question that Chairman Levin asked Secretary Panetta and General Dempsey, particularly General Dempsey, was kind of a progressive question. What did you do first? He asked him about the strategy. Do you and the other chiefs concur with the strategy and then the budget? And how did all that happen? And he asked him to lay out or confirm this process by which the strategy and the budget were agreed on. That struck me as interesting. I've heard a lot of these hearings, and I've never heard that process so definitively defined, or at least attempt to be so definitively defined by a member of the Armed Services Committee like that.
Well,
Any significance there?
Well, you know, budgets are typically very orderly and no. It was a logical process. I think that, you know, they really have very seriously stepped back and said, we're at a juncture, we're at a crossroads. We're out of Iraq, we're going to be out of Afghanistan, and in the meantime, the world is changing in terms of cyber and ISR, and we really need to. Start from the strategic perspective and then let's align our budget accordingly, recognizing that those past 10 years of ever increasing defense budgets are behind us. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at, just the opposite now. And, whether we can avoid sequestration or not, the landscape's changed and our priorities need to change and the budget needs to reflect that. So I think that's what they've done. And I think, they've done a good job at least laying that groundwork.
Well, let's talk a little bit when we come back from the break about how companies should be thinking about the environment that we're in now. Randy Garber is a partner at A.T. Kearney and my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning, NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hey, Caps fans, go into the game? Then get the app. Download the official Verizon Center mobile app to your Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry to enhance your in-arena experience. You can locate your favorite food and beverage stands, report issues to guest services during the game, find out about future events at the arena, and much more. To download, text ARENA to 43803 or visit WashingtonCaps.com now.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Some in Congress want to raise the bar on how much federal procurement goes to small business. We'll talk to House Small Business Committee Chairman Sam Graves. The FCC has been on the forefront of data transparency. We'll speak with the agency's chief data officer about his strategies. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Randy Garber of A.T. Kearney is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you didn't bring your crystal ball with you, Randy, but you kind of seem to have one based on what you and one of your colleagues, Bob Willen, were writing in the on the Hill newspaper's website back in November about some of the effects that cuts at DOD might have and how the Defense Department and industry might reshape themselves. So I'd like to go over this. You have five guiding principles you write in this piece. So I'd like to kind of just hop over each one of these for a moment and get your thoughts on them in a little more detail. The first one, reduction targets must be broadly known, specific, and consistent. It seems like the Pentagon has done that with the budget request that comes out on that came out on Monday.
I think absolutely. Everybody probably wants as much detail as you can possibly get. But I think the strategy was laid out and the budgets are known. So as far as the current budget, as I say, the whole sequestration, if that were to hit, is kind of a black box at this point, and you really don't see anybody talking about it. It's kind of, close my eyes and maybe it'll go away.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Secretary Panetta was specifically asked at the Armed Services Committee, have you planned for this? And he said no. It's like they've gone out of their way not to plan for it, expecting that it won't happen. So that surprised me. I mean, I got to believe somewhere, somebody inside the building has some files in a manila envelope or on a computer or whatever, in case of sequestration, break glass, there's got to be something.
I would imagine that's the case. The thing about sequestration, I've heard all kinds of theories about, what Congress might do, what the president might do to kind of ease the blow. Given an election year, who knows what's going to happen. But I think suffice it to say we're not done with cuts.
Yeah.
Whether we have sequestration or not, the people in the Pentagon, I'm sure, are running scenarios about, what if it's another $100 billion, $200, $300, $500, whatever.
The second principle that you and Bob write about is everything must be on the table. Do you get a sense of that after reading what the Pentagon put out on Monday, that's how they're thinking?
I think pretty much that would be true. You can look, they did take force reductions, beginning to kind of look at benefits, certainly beginning to look at, redundant overlapping organizations, as I think we may have mentioned at the outset, looking at some efficiencies and productivity opportunities. It was certainly not a budget that unilaterally picked on one area for reduction. So, I'd have to say everything is on the table. You can probably argue until you're blue in the face about, the degree to which things were put on the table and what's kind of left that should be put on the table. But in general, I'd say, yeah.
I was struck by, you mentioned the benefits, and I just found it interesting that I didn't get an avalanche of press releases from some of the advocacy groups for uniformed current members of the military and some of the veterans groups about the proposals, for example, for TRICARE benefits and so on. Mm-hmm. It seems, I guess, that pretty much everybody, as we talked about in the first segment, people knew these things were at least possible, and so nobody was really surprised. And then, so maybe that kind of eased the blow potentially of some of these the benefits cuts. The third principle in your piece is new delivery models must urgently be entertained and embraced. Now, you certainly have been working with the Defense Department and with the companies that do business with it long enough to know this is the classic turning the aircraft carrier in the ocean scenario. This is not a quick deal here, right?
Yeah, it certainly isn't easy. If it is easy, we would have done it a long time ago, right? Mm-hmm. And you really have, very large, complex organizations that have grown up on the government side, and then you look at the big primes. They have big, huge, complex organizations on their side as well, and then behind them, is a whole series of very complex supply chains, right? So, just given the legacy of growth in regulations, the FAR, the DFAR, policy, this little thing called the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of legacy in place, I guess, and you've also got. I think, as I said at the outset, you kind of have some rigidity that's kind of built into the system. So,
mm-hmm.
you can unilaterally impose force reductions. You can unilaterally impose issues in terms of pay and benefits. You can stop programs. You can extend programs. But that new delivery models is something that really has to be done jointly between the government and the supplier. And while it's difficult, I guess my personal opinion is that's probably the most value-added way to go about tackling this dilemma.
Do you get a sense that the structure inside the Pentagon is open to the idea, understanding that change is not always fun, is not always easy? Or is the structure inside the Pentagon kind of resistant to this concept, not maybe seeing the benefits or just not feeling like doing change?
Well, I think the sentiment in the Pentagon is very much very receptive to change and doing business differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody recognizes that, it was kind of a, rising tide floats all boats for mm-hmm. the last 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And as a result, we could kind of deal with some of our problems by throwing more money at it.
Mm-hmm.
And those days are gone.
Yeah.
And people recognize that, the relationship and the way of doing business between government and defense contractors today is not efficient.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of room for improvement. And I think people are really open to new ideas, new perspectives, and particularly if they come along with a business case that says, this is a way to get a much better return on the taxpayers' invested dollar.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the fourth and fifth of these principles, I have a couple more questions about this one, but we've got to take a break. So we'll come back in just a moment with Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
On November 17, 2011, the future of air and missile defense changed forever. MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, demonstrated the first ever over-the-shoulder launch against a simulated target. It was an unprecedented breakthrough and proved that only MEADS, with its 360-degree coverage, can defend our warfighters against air and missile defense threats from any direction. MEADS has the advanced capabilities and reliability that the 40-year-old Patriot system can't provide and will cost half as much to man and maintain versus upgrading Patriot. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends more area with fewer assets and has the lethality to defeat advanced threats. Defending more, costing less. MEADS. For more information, go to MEADS-AMD.com. That's MEADS-AMD.com.
Paid for by Lockheed Martin.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
EMC Solutions for data center consolidation, virtualization, cloud, and security help federal agencies achieve their mission with lower risk and cost. Immix Group, a federally focused IT distributor, works with solution providers to ensure EMC products are available through preferred vehicles to simplify the acquisition of storage solutions. To learn how EMC Solutions can help your agency or to partner with Immix Group, visit emcgov.com. That's emcgov.com.
Watching weight gain? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. with HHS HealthBeat. A study indicates young women don't always realize when they've gained weight. Researchers at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston saw this among 466 women with an average age of 25 who did six-month checkups in which they reported whether they thought they had gained weight. But the researchers say some gained more than 10 pounds without realizing it. Researcher Mabubur Rahman points out that letting body weight grow above normal has health risks.
If they can keep their body weight normal, their risk of cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, and cancer would be much lower, and quality of life would be much higher.
The study in the Journal of Women's Health was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter today. My guest is Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney talking about what's going on inside the Defense Department and inside the Defense Industrial Base. We're talking about the guiding principle that you and your colleague are writing about, and it's has to do with delivery models that they should be urgently entertained and embraced, as you write. This sounds to me like it fits well with what former Secretary Lynn talked about and now Secretary Carter has talked about on a number of occasions about DOD wanting to ensure that they have a diverse, competitive, healthy defense industrial base. That sounds on the surface maybe to be at odds with what we've been talking about the budget situation that the Defense Department is in. And vendors tell me on a regular basis, they don't say this contract is LPTA, lowest price technically acceptable, but I can tell that it's going to be. And sure enough, when the award comes out, that's what it looks like. So there seem to be a couple of realities going on simultaneously. Is that fair to say, or is that a misinterpretation, do you think?
No, I think that's accurate. You know, Dr. Carter and I think pretty consistently in the Pentagon, you'll hear them say time and time again, this is not an attack on profit margins. Mm-hmm. And we're more than happy to reward with higher profit margins in exchange for driving down costs and becoming more productive. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I've personally seen kind of a trend towards low-price, technically acceptable contracts. And as a supplier of consulting services, it's a little bit concerning, to say the least. I think it really boils down to the nature of what you are buying. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm buying a commodity service or a commodity item, LPTA may be just fine. It really doesn't provide me a lot of value to have something better than what's technically acceptable.
Right.
As you begin to move away from kind of commodity services, then I think that relationship kind of becomes strained, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I can be just barely technically acceptable, or I can provide, better value per dollar above what's minimally technically acceptable, which may be a better value for my customer, for the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
And LPTA doesn't necessarily work at all well in those kind of situations, in my opinion. I think the real issue then becomes, how do I actually structure something that's best value so that, I am legitimately bringing competitive pressures to bear, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I really do have a basis to step back and evaluate best value. I think there were two drivers really between kind of the LPTA. One is that the push for cost reduction, it's sort of a meat axe, but by God, we're going to drive lower prices.
Right? That's right.
But the other side of it is just the whole protest history in the last few years that, mm-hmm. LPTA, I can pretty much draw the guidelines black and white, and you know, best value becomes where I'm weighing a lot of other factors becomes arguably more subject to protest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to some degree, it may be cleaner. Is it the best value solution? Certainly depends on the nature of what you're buying.
If I'm a company trying to operate, trying to navigate in this environment, certainly I want to grow. This is not necessarily a time of growth for the budget, so a time of growth for companies can be potentially challenging. We talked a little bit during the break about the perspective that the big companies are big enough that they will survive pretty much anything. The secondary companies are a little bit more in flux, and the companies that you referred to as the tier three companies are really trying to figure out where they're going here. Talk about what they should be looking at in your view strategy-wise to try to make sure that they can find a port in the storm, so to speak.
Good question. There's certainly no one answer, but I guess if I were sitting in the shoes of a tier three CEO, I'd be figuring out, you know, where do I really have some niches? Looking at, you know, where the defense landscape's going, the demand in terms of, you know, cyber ISR, electronic warfare, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do I actually have a niche that I can stake out and really make myself just absolutely invaluable to, you know, that tier two or that subsystem integrator or the prime? And it really, I think, requires kind of looking over the horizon. I heard an interesting comment yesterday, you know, if you're just now thinking about the downturn, you're way too late. Right? and probably really, really critical for the smaller guys to really understand. So what is my niche? How am I going to make myself invaluable? How am I really going to add value? And you know, arguably the tier twos, tier threes, tier fours are really where innovation happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how can I really, you know, accelerate that process, really convert it to value and really find a place to embed myself? Frankly, you know, particularly on the high tech side, you know, a lot of these folks have feet in both the commercial camp and the public sector camp. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I've talked to some CEOs that are basically saying, "I'm going to have to step back and look to see whether this public sector stuff is really a good business decision for me going forward."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's concern at the prime level that that my portfolio of available options at the sub-tier levels may actually decline. And I think in the merger and acquisition space, it's very doubtful you're going to see any more consolidation among the big five.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing quite a bit of activity in terms of roll-ups consolidation at the sub-tier levels.
Mm.
I would expect that to continue as well. I mean, I make the point about finding my niche and kind of mining it, but I guess the other strategy is let's kind of broaden my portfolio so
yeah.
I do have the ability to capitalize on the puts and takes and take some punches and yet leverage where those opportunities do exist.
I had an interesting conversation with somebody who's been doing this for a long time, and I said, who do you think the winners are going to be and who do you think the losers are going to be? And he said, the winners, I'm not so sure. But I know who the losers are going to be. They're going to be the guys who just write buzzwords on their business cards. And what he was getting at was somebody looks and says, well, there's going to be a lot more money for cybersecurity, so I'll figure out how my company can provide that and scribble it on the card, and now I'm a cybersecurity company. I'm surprised by the amount of people that see that as a potential possibility. Nobody would ever admit they do it themselves, but claim to see a lot of it in the marketplace.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to adware versus mm-hmm. reality.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I would agree. I think in this environment, you know, really being able to back up value and ability to deliver and execute is absolutely critical, which gets called back to that whole affordability thing, right? I'm not going to invest in programs that we can't afford,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to continue programs that we can't afford. Seems pretty fundamental, but at the end of the day, that means that you know, I've got to define what I can execute, and then, you know, by golly, I've got to come through with it. So, you know, regardless of where you are on the value chain, prime, tier two, three, et cetera, you know, absolutely excellent execution, I think, is kind of the table stakes.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney, and we'll continue our conversation on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
What is causing low morale at your agency, and what can managers do to fix it? Tune in for our special report, Managing Morale, Fixing the Problems Plaguing Your Federal Office, all this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. See the results of our exclusive survey and hear what Congress expects of feds during these tough budget times. Plus, OPM Director John Berry tells us how he motivates employees. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term morale.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DOD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DOD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney. And Randy and his one of his colleagues, Bob Willen, writing a list of five guiding principles in policymaking at the Department of Defense as they deal with the budget realities there. We've covered a couple of them already. Reduction targets must be broadly known, specific, and consistent. And second, everything must be on the table. Third, new delivery models must be urgently entertained and embraced. And we have a link to this piece that you wrote for the Hill newspaper back in November at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Before we get to four and five on this list, Randy, wanted to ask you about something that we touched on briefly in the last segment, and that is how that's the dynamic of companies working together, partnering to collaborate with the government. And then also the government-to-industry collaboration. Now, Dan Gordon tried to work on that somewhat before he left OFPP with the Mythbusters campaign, easy for me to say. He tried to help both sides of that equation navigate the back and forth there and deal with some of the things that some folks on the acquisition side in government think exist but don't really exist. Do you see any results of that or any other efforts in government kind of easing the path of that collaboration between the agency side and the industry side?
I guess I'm beginning to see some kind of chinks in the armor, if you will, but I think we've got a long, long ways to go.
What has to happen to facilitate that?
Well, I guess a couple of things come to mind right offhand. You know, you have a kind of a legacy process, you know, a legacy set of regulations, and kind of a legacy in many cases of a lack of mutual trust in some programs, some pretty trying history, if you will, right? So you kind of have a legacy of how business has been done. And so one of the things I think that really has to change is just the whole behavior mindset, both in terms of kind of reinvigorating the trust and secondly, reexamining just the processes, you know, by which we transact business.
Mm-hmm.
The non-value-added meetings and reviews upon reviews, and et cetera, right? So that's kind of the one piece, kind of the behavior and process side. The second is the incentive side. You know, and as I think we talked earlier, you know, Department of Defense very adamant that this is not an attack on profit margins. And yet, you know, we have LPTAs coming out, and we have – and the supply side is kind of saying, I hear you, but you know, I'm not sure I
not seeing it, but
– So, you know, if you're really going to have collaboration, it's got to be you know, economically good value on both sides. So, you know, I think we really need to think hard about how we get those incentives right so that I really am on the supply side very much incented and see the economic benefit of doing business differently.
Mm-hmm.
and really maybe becoming much more transparent in my, you know, my cost structures, my business processes, et cetera. And we're, you know, we just actually finished kind of a joint process improvement exercise with one of the big primes and several of the satellite programs, just looking at the whole issue of program governance, you know, how the programs manage themselves on both the government side and the prime side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty novel. You know, they were kind of moving from a cost-plus environment to more of a fixed-price environment, and the informal interactions and the layer upon layer of reviews and the data requirements, the earned value management system, and all these things that were kind of legacy under a cost-plus world, you know, just kind of posed the question, does this really make sense to just carry this forward in a fixed-price world, particularly when they were going from kind of development stage to more of a production stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So parties got together, jointly stepped back, and well, we asked some tough questions, you know, do we need all these meetings? Do we need all these people to go to these meetings? Is our informal interaction really adding value, or, you know, is it too much, too little? And do we really need to, provide a 258-page cost performance report, which nobody in their right mind is ever going to read, right? You know, so a lot of opportunity to really when both sides said, okay, let's kind of step back, let's jointly challenge this thing from both our perspectives, because neither one of us, you know, is necessarily right here or has the best answer, and,
mm-hmm.
and come up with a joint solution, and big opportunity. I mean, multi-hundred millions of dollars in just program governance, you know, much less actually nuts and bolts to build the product,
which
is program governance. So an example, you know, of how it can work, and it can work, and in my opinion, it needs to work in a much bigger, broader scale.
There's a lot more there, but I want to make sure we have time. We're starting to run out of time in the hour, and I want to make sure we have a chance when we come back from the break to talk about the last two items on this list of five guiding principles with my guest, Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney, and he's here for Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
Look at what the National Defense Authorization Act, signed last January, has required the Department of Defense to do, and that is require the department to implement software security assurance capabilities for both deployed software and that software that is being delivered. delivered.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help government secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
On the move but need your CAPS info? CAPS Mobile lets you use your mobile phone to stay connected to the CAPS. Receive breaking news and special offers by text message. Check live scores and stats with the CAPS mobile app. Enter Text to Win contest for great CAPS prizes and much more. To join the CAPS mobile club, text CAPS to 43803 now. For more info on all CAPS mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCAPS.com. Stay CAPS connected with CAPS Mobile.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest for the hour today on Industry Chatters, Randy Garber. He's a partner at A.T. Kearney, and we've been talking about this list of five guiding principles that Randy and his colleague Bob Willen writing about in the Hill newspaper. This is back in November, and these five guiding principles seem to be very prescient based on what we've seen in the defense budget coming out on Monday. We've talked about the first three, and we have the list linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The fourth and the fifth are two that we talked about a little bit off the air, Randy, that DOD seems to have a handle on. Fourth, kill the few to save the money. And fifth, cutting supplier profits is a short-term solution that creates long-term problems. We talked about that one a little bit already, about the desire of DOD to manage the defense industrial base. The fourth one we haven't explored as much, and that's something that I think nobody could really look at the budget proposal that DOD put out on Monday and say they're not trying that already. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think the budget proposed, they try to do exactly that. If you look, for example, Global Hawk Block 30, you know, probably a good example of the whole affordability mindset in place, right? Costs have continued to go up. I have an alternative, the U-2.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that, you know, I could, the Global Hawk Block 30 would replace the need for the U-2, but, you know, the costs have escalated to the point where those economics don't necessarily work, right? So let's stick with the U-2.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's clearly what the budget as proposed has reflected. I think what will be interesting is if sequestration hits as written, that requires across the board cuts, and you know, I think as it's our opinion that that's kind of the worst possible way to go about cutting budgets. So we'll see. I personally hope that as further cuts manifest themselves, if they do, that we'll still be able to abide by this fourth principle.
Yeah, I have been struck at how explicitly members of the administration so far that have been on the Hill have talked about how bad they think sequestration is. At the same time, the president has said that he's not going to do anything. He would veto any attempts to change sequestration. The OMB acting director, Jeffrey Zients, said exactly the paraphrasing, but pretty close quote, sequestration's bad policy and we don't want it to happen. Secretary Panetta said pretty much the same thing. And yet it seems like unless something changes fairly dramatically, fairly soon, that's where we're headed. And at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, Secretary Panetta said we haven't planned for it at all. We're not thinking about it at all.
So it kind of feels like a slow motion train wreck, right?
Yeah.
but you know, I just don't know. My crystal ball is not that good. And I think, as we said at the outset, an election year and the times in which we live, the crystal ball is probably cloudier than it would normally be, and you know, simple logic may not prevail.
I wanted to throw a couple of concepts out there that have gotten talked about regarding the Defense Department and just get your kind of your quick reaction in the short time that we have left. Lots been made about reversibility, the idea that we can make some concepts go away but bring them back when we need to at some point. Is that a practical strategy, do you think?
It's an interesting strategy.
And that's a diplomatic answer.
Well, you know, I think it's a great idea, and we'd love to be able to do it. I think this is a devil in the detail situation, just how reversible. Maybe in terms of reserves and those kinds of things, the answer is yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of kind of some of the industrial-based discussions we had, you know, if I lose certain segments of my industrial base, that's just not reversible in any short order.
Mm-hmm.
Simple fact of life. So, yeah. Devil's in the details on reversibility.